This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Hello, my name is Chris Canning. I'm the mayor of the city of Calistoga, and we are meeting this morning in the lobby of the historic Mount View Hotel and Spa, which is just celebrating its 100th anniversary. Welcome.
Thank you. Being a mayor of a small town, it's typical that you have a day job too, right?
Yes, indeed. It's both the mayor job is supposed to be part-time, but it does consume a lot of my time by choice, but I do have a day job as well.
And your other life is what?
My daytime job, as I joke, is in the telecom industry, a company called Illumination Technologies, and we build infrastructure for the telecommunications industry with a public safety benefit.
So physical structural stuff?
Physical structures, yeah. I'm not smart enough to do that. I have very smart people I work with.
And you live here in town?
I do. I've lived in Calistoga about 13 years. Mm-hmm. I've been the mayor for coming on my 8th year, originally from the East Coast, a native New Englander, which explains my pleasant disposition. I was transferred out here 13 years ago for work. I was only supposed to be here 3 years, and I absolutely love living here. I count myself very lucky to be in this.
So this is home, all set.
It's the longest place I've ever lived other than my childhood home.
What spurred you to become mayor and get involved in local politics? That's a thankless job.
Sometimes, yes, more often than not. It's my father's fault. When I was moved here 13 years ago, it was to run a company, and we were the largest employer in town at that time. And I had some interactions with the city that I thought could have been better. And then when I left that job and ran the Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Bureau, I had some challenges with the city at the time. And my dad, who still lives on the East Coast, talk every week, and he'd hear me B&M and complain, and one day he stopped me and said, shut up or get involved. So literally, I ran for city council 10 years ago to spite my father, and then 2 years in, I thought I could benefit the city by running for mayor, and the rest is history.
Whether a big town or a small town, there's always two lenses to look at things, and there are those that believe less is more, regulation and building department and simple things.
Right.
What are some of the issues here that the locals are cage-rattling about?
Well, while we're a small city, we're about 5,200 people. We have 1.1 million visitors a year who pass through.
So tourism is a huge...
Tourism is the industry. Yeah. Whether people choose to acknowledge it or not, we were actually founded in 1863 as a tourism destination. It was our sole reason for existence. Unfortunately, over the decades, we've had people who've made families and lives around that. So there's that constant kind of ebb and flow between, are we a tourist town? Do we serve the locals? My attitude is, we're fortunate to be a place that a million people want to come to, leave their money behind, to benefit and improve the quality of life for those of us that live here.
Interesting balance, because I too live in a beach town that's very much a vacation town, so we struggle with those same issues.
It can be a very delicate balance. At the same time, the reality is we're fortunate that our business is tourism versus, diamond mining or fracking or oil drilling. It's a relatively clean industry. We're fortunate because we live in a place that people want to come visit, and we benefit from that. And when you dollars and cents it, 53 cents out of every dollar we spend for police, fire, ambulance, sidewalk, streets is coming from someone else's pockets, not from our local.
You have your generator transient occupancy tax. Mm-hmm. Is that a revenue source for the city or more tourism?
Our TOT, transient occupancy tax, alone is 53% of our total city revenue. Then on top of that, still sticking with tourism, the sales tax that tourists generate, and then the property tax generated by businesses that serve tourists, we're probably close to 64%.
So in your TOT, can you earmark and say, we need another policeman, say, and take funds from that and make that happen?
So TOT goes to the general fund automatically.
So it's discretionary.
Correct. So 53 cents of every dollar that we pay for a policeman, a police car, mm-hmm. a fireman or woman, all is tourism driven.
You have a Chamber of Commerce and a Visitors Bureau, too?
We do, yeah. I actually managed the Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Bureau for about 8 years. They're independent from the city. It's a nonprofit trade organization. It's been around since 1946, and it works very closely with the city. And, we have similar benefits. What benefits them benefits the city. So we have a really good relationship, and they do a great job marketing or sharing the unique experiences of Calistoga with the rest of the world.
Fascinating, because whether you had a tourism entity or not, it's a self-perpetuating machine. They're going to come anyway.
They're going to come anyway, yeah. So you might as well have something that kind of manages and helps that experience.
And easily. Again, briefly, to justify your tourism expenditure, what are the benefits that would be a negative if you didn't have that in place?
If you didn't have it managed and organized, you could end up with, you know, chaos, basically. So, for example, we cater to and encourage not more people to come, mm-hmm. but more people who are going to spend in a certain way. Less is more for us. So rather than having 1,000 people come and, you know, spend $100, we'd rather have, you know, 100 people come and spend $1,000, type of thing.
Yeah. Quality.
It's less impact, because at the end of the day, we're still a small community, total of 2.2 square miles.
Even the physical town being laid out in the Gold Rush era, yeah. I go, where would the tour buses park?
Yeah, exactly. We tend to be just far enough north in the valley that we don't attract a big day trip tour bus business. We're very much leisure travel, which is great.
So it's independent. Families. So. And,
exactly, yeah. And when you look at our hotel experiences, they mostly cater. Or small corporate meetings, small groups, but not the vast bus loads that can impact some other communities.
Lucky you.
So, we appreciate that.
Yeah. So demographics, where statistically do people come from? Would it be Bay Area primary?
Yep. So we're still about 80% of our visitor base is from within a 3.5 hour drive from here, primarily the Bay Area. Beyond that, Southern California, and then it's Texas, New York, Washington, Illinois, and then when you go internationally,
so Chicago
is a big city for us. Yeah. And then when you go beyond that, country wise, it's Canada, and then it's UK, Australia, Germany, and then it spreads out from there.
And what happened? There was a big growth, as you remember, with the Chinese inbound demographic, but that's kind of slipped, hasn't it?
We never really experienced a big bump on that one. I know the city of San Francisco did, but for us, most of those are day trippers. Mm-hmm. You know, they base in San Fran and bus out from there. We're a little too far for that.
Yeah.
And also, it's a tough thing to come up here on a day trip and experience a full day of spa, which is what we're famous for, or go to our wineries, because a lot of those tourists aren't buying wine to bring home because of what it takes to get it back home. Yeah. And demographically, who comes to see us? We tend to skew a little bit younger than the rest of Napa Valley. We're more of an outdoor experience because we're at the narrowest part of the valley, so hikers, bikers, walkers, trekkers, and a lot of younger clientele, because we're still a little bit more approachable price point than some of our neighbors. I mean, we tend to be a lot more laid back.
It really is very much a best kept secret relatively in the whole Napa Sonoma area. I mean, how cool. Almost a little mountain town and a historic Gold Rush era town.
Yeah. When we talk to people, you know, when we ask them after they visited first time, you know, what do you feel about it? What do you think? They're like, they use phrases like laid back, relax, eclectic, nobody's in a rush. Type of thing. They get this wine country experience that is very different than some of our sister cities or neighboring cities. And each of us has our own unique personality, and that's the way it should be. But, you know, to the point you made, the mountain town, we are literally nestled right at the top of the Napa Valley. We touch Lake County. We touch Sonoma County. So it's a great stepping off point for your wine country experience, regardless of which wine country you want to go to.
And you have some geothermal right on the edge of town. I thought, oh my God, they got a fire going again.
Well, actually, how we were founded was as a spa town, a resort spa town for geothermal. We sit actually right on top of one of the biggest geothermal water sources in North America. We were actually founded or discovered, if you will, by the Wapo Indians centuries ago because of the perceived healing powers of the water. So we started spa, and that's what established us long before wine. And now, as we say, the wine industry complements our spa industry, or vice versa.
Really fascinating. One of the interesting things, I've known a couple other mayors, and I go, are you sure you want to do this? I mean, nice guys, you know, and the day they're elected, they go from being a nice guy to being this evil empire cartel ruler. And there are people just waiting. Whoever, you know, 50% of the people are going to be against you before you opened your mouth.
And that varies by the day, yeah. which 50%.
So, yeah.
It certainly has its challenges, mm-hmm. but as I say, the vast majority of people you interact with are good, mm-hmm. and all they want to do is have a safe place to live, raise their family, enjoy themselves. But, you know, just
but
like...
you have to be tough-skinned.
Yes, you cannot be thin-skinned on this.
Or you'd be in psychotherapy.
Well, we have a lot of wine. Did I mention that?
The healing quality.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's a level of service. It takes a lot of commitment. And, you know, to your point, you do have to be thick-skinned. You know, unfortunately, some people in the delivery of their feelings can be a little bit aggressive, rude, obnoxious, but...
There must be some things that you can do and that you do to peace treaties or whatever, you know, coffee and tea or whatever. Do you do meet and greet sort of things too?
I meet with anyone, anytime, anywhere. I mean, from the very early stages of my being in a mayor and going almost 8 years now, having access has been very important. So my cell phone's published. Anyone who calls me, you know, the first year people were shocked how quickly I'd respond to them on email, because if you give people that face-to-face or that voice to talk to and explain, there are reasons for everything we do. It's not because we're idiots and haven't thought things through. It's there are some rules, regulations, etc. And everybody feels very strongly about their particular issue, but we have to feel strongly about 100 issues at the same time.
Okay. Biggest challenges, things that you would like to accomplish and yet maybe have not yet, or you're in the midst of and you hope to.
Single biggest issue, no different than any other Bay Area cities and towns, is housing, housing, housing. The cost of housing, the availability of housing, it's crippling socially, it's crippling business-wise, because people who work in the industries that we support need somewhere to live.
Best idea?
You have to increase density, end of story. You have to allow for more houses on smaller parts of parcels in order to make that affordable. And you have to deed restrict, which means, you know, you're going to take some state, local, and federal funds.
Could it even be you inviting a tiny house in your backyard?
We would love that, yeah. We actually are adopting some new ADUs, accessory dwelling unit regulations, used to be nicknamed granny units. We're doing a lot to encourage those. But at the end of the day, you know, there's only so much land, so you've got to increase your density. We haven't grown as much as our general plan has accommodated for, so we have room to do that. But
you know what's amazing is it's one of the fundamental things of life, of living, food, housing, from caveman days, and we can't figure it out.
Well, we can figure it out.
But so far, it's a disaster, man. San Francisco, what a living nightmare.
Well, we've regulated ourselves year after year, all unintended consequences that end up layering and make it almost impossible in some areas to build out. And those changes, we're starting to see some reversal in that. And people who used to be opposed to higher density housing or more housing, they're now in a place where their family, their friends are being impacted by it, and there's been an attitude shift. And you're right. It's one of the basic fundamentals of life is shelter.
And again, you right here in a small little town feel it like San Francisco or L.A.?
We have the same exact problem that they do, only it's just a smaller scale. But the impact is the same.
Okay, another challenge.
After housing, it's if you want to go to the business side, it's workforce. I mean, we have an unemployment rate here in California of about 1.2%.
Wow. Just recruiting and finding workers
is a huge... directly to the housing issue. There's nowhere for them to live. We have people, it's not uncommon to commute an hour. We just have far more jobs than we have people to do, so we have to help in that regard. Beyond that, it's just, you know, every city... deferred maintenance, infrastructure. We were very fortunate because of the type of economy we have, tourism, that people want to be here, and we benefit from that. And, you know, we've taken great strides in our park and recreation, our facilities, things of that nature.
So potholes?
Yeah. After housing, that's the number one problem.
The more mayors I talk to around America, I'm expecting these major complex things. You know, well, I've pay more potholes than any mayor.
The pothole is the pothole or a broken sidewalk are kind of your hand in hand. You're going to get shellacked for that no matter what. You can save the world, but if there's a pothole in front of that person's house, forget it.
Isn't that funny? And yet it never makes the headlines.
Nope. Yeah, it's you know, same for every city, you know, whether you're big or small, and we just try our best. And on that line, we're working really hard to become... We're fortunate because we're relatively small and we're flat, so we want to be much more walkable, bikeable city. And when you make some of those changes, it impacts people because that means you're removing parking in some cases.
Right. And that was my next question. What are you doing to deal with parking without uglification of the town? That's a tough one.
It's a tough one. And we have some folks who feel that we have a parking problem because they can't park right in front of the business they want to be in.
Little do they know.
Yeah, right? I've lived in cities where we really have a parking problem. But we have to get creative in where you put it just off the city center. Unfortunately, at some point, we're going to have to go to a parking deck concept, which, you know, you don't associate with a small town, but they are very efficient.
I like the ones that are kind of blended. They almost look like an office building.
Yes, you can get very creative about it. I mean, some people would like us to put them underground, but we do live in an earthquake zone, and because we sit in a giant geothermal water source, we have a water table issue.
Interesting.
Some of those challenges.
Earth berm.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, one more challenge, frustration, thing you hope to accomplish.
We're starting to see a lot more of the kind of frustration and anger at the national level come local. And what frustrates me is people need to take a breath, talk to each other, compromise. We're in a point in society where everyone needs to be a winner, and they need to win the whole thing versus let's compromise. And a lot of drop the mic moments. They want to come in, make their statement, and leave, not listen to the other person's opinion. And we're seeing that. You know, and it should be more, be able to accomplish that more in a small city where you know each other, you see each other.
You can't do it here. You can't do it anywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Beyond that, housing for me is what keeps me up at night at all levels for people. And then just making sure that we are a living, breathing, thriving, evolving town.
So back to civil communication. Where? How would you do that? Best case, you know, town hall? Or?
So we do community forums third Wednesday of the month. They can be topic specific or not. All of the city council members, myself, are all accessible via email, cell phones. I'll meet with anyone, anytime, anywhere. One of the biggest negatives we've experienced as of late is social media. I mean, it could be a plus, minus, but Nextdoor.com is an example. Every community has them. Every mayor I talk to, it's a curse. It's a one-way stream of information where people, I call them the keyboard cowboys. They hide behind their keyboard and cast aspersions and then aren't willing to take in information. Step away from your keyboard. Come say hello. Talk to somebody in person.
I don't think they have the guts.
Yeah, well, there's some of that. Keyboard cowboys are cowards often.
What a new frontier, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's and you end up getting yourself stuck into or sucked into an echo chamber where you're just listening to people, the same people feed on each other. And when you talk about introducing logic and reason to the conversation, if it doesn't work for them, they're not interested. And that could be no matter what side of the issue you're on. But it does, you know, it erodes confidence, it erodes the ability to get things done. It consumes far too much of your time that you could be using elsewhere for other better topics.
We talked a lot about challenges. How about rewards?
We have been a very fortunate community in terms of our economic growth. We came out of the recession. We poised ourselves during the recession to make some modifications that have worked out well.
Budgetary, yeah.
We went from, at one point, only having $17,000 in the bank to now we have a reserve of almost $10 million. So we've been very cautious about that. We're fortunate because we're a desirable place to visit. We haven't lost our character and charm. We're very concerned about how we manage that because at the end of the day, that's why people come here, is for a small-town character.
You're blessed on one hand in that you can't grow too much.
That is, yes. So you have to be very creative with how you evolve.
Just physical.
Yeah,
geography.
Yeah, we don't want to be this sprawling community. But at the same time, the delicate balance is allowing for growth while still maintaining your look and feel and your spirit. And I think we've done a pretty good job. And now there are some people in the community who feel otherwise. They have revisionist history of how it used to be. But the reality is since the late 1800s, we have been a tourist town, full stop, no questions asked.
Very, very cool. Everybody thinks Napa, they think Sonoma / wine, but within a mile is one of the most legendary wineries in California viticulture history, Chateau Montelena.
Absolutely. We are fortunate to be the home of Chateau Montelena, which you can argue back and forth, but it put the California wine industry on the map. I mean, hands down, incredible experience, incredible history, incredible family that owns it. But yes, indeed, it is a wine mecca. We're still very approachable. We have smaller wineries. More often than not, you're going to meet the owners. You're going to meet the winemakers. We tend to have more of an intimate experience.
Okay, if somebody wanted to learn more about the town.
So if you want to visit, it's visitcalistoga.com. Very simple.
That's
all
easy.
The events. Yeah, we try to keep it that way. All the events, activities, what to do, where to go, all right there. And my name is Chris Canning. I'm the mayor of the city of Calistoga.
Chris, thanks so much for sharing. What a great morning.
I appreciate your time. Thanks for being here.
All right. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Calistoga. We'll see you here. Laura Kirk Lee, Knightsbridge Winery.
Hi, Tom.
You know I'm staying down the street at Mount View Hotel. Early this morning, I go for a walk down, I call it Main Street, Lincoln. And one of the first things that caught my attention a block from the hotel is this cool, ancient bank building on change. This is really a great building. Then I discover it's no longer a bank, but there's wine inside of it.
This is a great old space, and it's a building with a lot of interesting history. We're sitting up here in the vault, and there is an actual vault here. And
the door is still on it.
It is. It's the original door. And we have a table here that's similar to where probably bankers 100 years ago and the board of the bank would have sat and made decisions about lending in agriculture and to local small businesses. So it's a building with a lot of history. And in fact, money was printed in our basement. So back in the teens and 20s, we printed about $500,000.
You printed money in the basement?
Yes, yeah. Oh, there was a printing press. And
did the government know about this?
Yes. And in fact, just down the street at the Sharpstein Museum, we were able to unearth some images of banknotes that had Calistoga National Bank printed right on
cool.
the front.
I think you should reprint some of those. I'm serious. That would be really cool.
So, true story. I was creating some little marketing collateral materials around that, and the printer that I was using got very nervous about us using an image of the old banknote. And there's regulations around how to print the images, and they have to be either 40% larger than they were normally or 40% smaller. So, anyway.
So nobody would mistake it for a real
book. Yeah, I was thinking it would rather be difficult to mistake this for an actual banknote. But anyway.
Okay, so digging a little deeper in the bank, talk to us about, you do wine tasting here for, I think, three different labels, right?
We do. In our tasting room, we have our Huge Bear wines and our Pont de Chevalier wines. And then up here in the vault where we are right now, we are tasting our Knightsbridge wines. And so the way that we've carved out different spaces is in order for guests to have maybe a more personalized and sit-down experience up here in the vault to really enjoy these amazing wines from our estate. And we also are tasting some Bechstoffer wines as well from the Dr. Crane Vineyard and from the Tokalon Vineyard.
So somebody's walking down Main Street, Lincoln, and they see your bank and they see the tasting room. Can they walk in off the street and have a taste, or do you have to make an appointment ahead of time?
Absolutely. Walk in, come in anytime. We're open 10 to 5:30. In fact, we'll even open earlier, stay late if we have a little bit of a few minutes of notice. But we really want to make sure that this is a casual experience and an approachable experience for the guests. We're serious about wine, but we don't want to take the tasting part too seriously. So Huge Bear wines are really accessible. They're wines that really run the gamut from Semillon all the way up to Cab Franc and Petit Verdot and everything in between. So some really interesting varieties beyond just Chardonnay and Cabernet.
But these are all regional, locally grown and produced?
They're actually all estate grown.
Oh,
so
wow.
Our estate is just 10 minutes north of here in Knights Valley. And so right now we're in Calistoga. And hop back on 128, Highway 29, when you're in Napa Valley, and head north. And 10 minutes just into Knights Valley. It's a really beautiful, kind of magical place. A very small little AVA. Everything is from our estate vineyard.
That's so cool. Now I want to take a drive out there.
Yeah. You should. Yeah. It would be close. I don't know if you have time today, but it's gorgeous. You know, I think we are so lucky to be here in Calistoga and have this wonderful history here. Mm-hmm. and great food, but a casual and approachable atmosphere. And we're seeing more and more guests want to come and just sort of stay up valley, stay here in Calistoga. There's so much to do. There's wonderful small hotels. There's all kinds of interesting little shops on our main street, wonderful places to eat, and we're close to world-class wine. So we love when people just come and spend a few days up here in Calistoga. There's lots to do, and we're really lucky to be here.
Again, bottom line for me is that absence of corporate. It's very much ma and pa and family-run community.
Well, that's for sure how Knightsbridge is. Our owners purchased this vineyard. They're two brothers, Jim and Essel Bailey, and their brother-in-law, Tom Costin, purchased the vineyard in 2006. They've been very hands-on. We're really small. It's a 100-acre vineyard planted to 50 acres. We only make a few thousand cases of wine. It's almost all sold direct-to-consumer. You can find us in restaurants locally. We're very much the mom and pop.
In San Francisco, too?
You can find us in San Francisco, absolutely.
Laura Kirkley, thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for opening the door to the vault.
Anytime.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Calistoga. We'll see you.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.